When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, welcome to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make smart choices about your financial life. So before we jump into the main part of the show, I normally do a Glinkonomics segment. And so this week, interest rates are up a little bit, not much changing there. We're seeing some other numbers for the housing market. What I really want to talk about is how on fire the housing market is this summer. Now, when I talked to Lawrence Yun, who's chief economist of the Real Estate National Association of Realtors, I saw him when I was at the National Association of Real Estate Editors Conference a couple of weeks ago. He told me that this was just going to be an out-of-sight summer. We were going to see a ton of sales. And that's exactly what's happening. Every week, it seems, the housing numbers are looking better and better. New construction starts are up. New construction sales are finally up, not where they should be, but up from where they've been. We're seeing existing home sales go crazy. We're also seeing home prices rise. And I think it's as if people have suddenly woken up and said, wow, interest rates might really go up this year, even though the last 3 years we've been saying interest rates are going up. They might actually go up this year. And every week or so, we're seeing in the papers or online comments from the Federal Reserve Board of members that are talking about how they think by September we're going to see the first interest rate hike. So maybe that's kind of filtering into everybody's brain. But what's really interesting is what's happening on the ground. So a really good friend of mine, Leonora, decided after 15 years of living in her house that she was going to sell and move to a different house. And she decided to sell first because she's my friend and we talk all the time about this instead of trying to buy first. So I told her that her house would need to look like basically HGTV. And since she could have another career as a home stager, it looked absolutely fabulous. The house had, she took my advice, she replaced the carpet up on the stairs and on the second floor, looked fantastic. Almost every part of the house looked basically new. It was in spectacular shape. And of course, the first day, she had a whole bunch of people and an initial offer that came in. She also had showings already set up for the day after and the day after. She had a super smart agent who priced the house $40,000 above where Leonora was thinking it would be priced. Originally, she was thinking it would be priced around $560,000, $570,000. The broker said, no, 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 we want to price it higher. Priced it at $620,000, and the house within 3 days had a full price offer with more interest people coming in. So what's going on with that? Here's what I think it is. Super low interest rates will allow somebody, a family who has a combined family income of $200,000, which could be one person at $200,000 a year, or it could be two people each at $100,000 a year, or some sort of a mix like that, interest rates would allow them to be able to finance enough at $417,000 or even to go into a jumbo loan situation to buy a house at $620,000. And indeed, if you look over the entire country, that price point is actually the hot price point. Once you get above 750 to a million, houses are sitting there because the amount of income that you need to buy a million-dollar house these days, even with interest rates as low as they are, is between $300,000 and $350,000 a year. And you're starting to get into $270,000, $150,000 a year. It's kind of vice president or higher level at a big corporation, and there just aren't that many jobs. A lot of those jobs were lost. A lot of those people who had those jobs lived on the savings when they sold their former homes. They don't have the down payments that they need to buy these kinds of homes. And so when you look at expensive neighborhoods across the country, homes priced between, say, $800,000, $900,000 to about $2 million are just sitting on the market. They are not selling. And of course, because, I don't know, the world works when people have $10 million a year in income, anything above that is flying off the shelves as well. And the eye-popping prices people are getting for things are just unbelievable. There is another house that is for sale, just one on the market on the coast in New York, and for now, like $95 million. And they actually think they're going to get somewhere close to that. All that is to say that if your house looks better than every single thing other than the market, it's in fabulous condition, and it's priced competitively, your house is going to sell, and it's going to sell fast. It's just that kind of summer. All right, moving back to the show, my guest today is Sherry Criss. She's the CEO of Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, a brand that launched in 2008, right at what seemed like the very worst time to get into the real estate business. And trust me, it was. But with Sherry at the helm, she came over from a sister brand, Coldwell Banker. Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate has thrived, and I'm hearing that they have about 10,000 agents. I was there when it was just Sherry and her first vice president. So I'm going to talk to her about what factors have enabled their success. But first, we're going to discuss research that they just conducted in partnership with the National Association of Gay and Lesbian Real Estate Professionals in the run-up, this is when they conducted it, to the big Supreme Court decision on gay marriage. Now that gay couples have the blessing of the federal judiciary, household formation may start to heat up for a demographic that has been understandably wary of housing discrimination in much of the country. After that, I'm going to answer a question from someone who wants to buy some undeveloped vacant land to build on when he retires. But he's a little short on cash, he needs a small loan to make the whole thing work, and that could throw a wrench into his plans because, as you probably have heard me say before, despite his ability to make a sizable down payment and high credit score, getting a loan on a vacant piece of land is really tough. So he's going to have to get creative. I've got some suggestions on how to do just that. And then I'm going to end with six tips for any landlord looking to find a responsible tenant. Investing in rental real estate is such a great way to create steady cash flow, but it can be, you know, a dream or a nightmare, depending on what kind of renter you end up with. So check out my tips to help tilt the odds in your favor. Okay, that's the lineup for today's show. Let's get started. But already this summer has come to be defined by massive and very welcome political and social changes here in the United States. Today, I want to talk about real-world impact of one of those changes. In particular, the Supreme Court's decision to legalize gay marriage. And if you're not gay, you may think, this doesn't directly affect me. But I'm here to tell you it does. For real estate agents, mortgage lenders, title and escrow companies, and other real estate service providers, this is a growing opportunity to cater to a profitable market niche. Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, in partnership with the National Association of Gay and Lesbian Real Estate Professionals, that is a very long acronym, conducted a first-of-its-kind survey on gay and lesbian attitudes towards real estate earlier this year. And if you only take two things away from their findings, it should be these. First, 81% of survey respondents felt that a Supreme Court ruling for marriage equality would make them feel more fiscally protected and confident about buying real estate. And that's always great. Second, the opportunity financially is huge. The LGBT demographic has an estimated purchasing power of, get this, $840 billion. And according to Nagel Rep, which is, I can't even believe I'm trying to say that, gays and lesbians live in virtually every county. So no matter where you help people buy and sell real estate, this demographic needs your help. I've got Sherry Criss, who's CEO of Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, with me on the show to talk about the survey and its results. And I also want to talk about how Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate has grown since its inception in only 2008, the beginning of the worst housing crisis in more than a century. Sherry, welcome to my show, Big Money Real Estate.
Thank you, Elise. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have you on this show, finally. So this survey that you did, and let's start with the survey, was just remarkable. You talked to 1,700 LGBT respondents surveyed for this buyer and seller survey. Were you surprised by these findings?
We were just stunned by the findings. And we knew it was a significant survey to conduct because it's never been done before. And as we, you know, launched our Better Homes and Gardens real estate brand, diversity in all forms was then and is very important to us. And so in looking for statistically correct survey information, around LGBT home buying and home selling trends, we couldn't find anything. And so we partnered up with Nagle Rep, as you mentioned earlier, and conducted this first of a kind survey. We had no idea what the results, would be. And we were so excited to, just read through everything. And we actually presented it at the National Association of Realtors mid-year conference at the end of May. And then sure enough, 6 to 7 weeks later, marriage is legal for the LGBT community across the country. So good timing, but it was just a coincidence.
So in the survey, you found that the top neighborhood priority for LGBT residents is safety, about 88%. But the top motivation for purchasing a new home is living in a better city or neighborhood, having a bigger home, and getting married now that they can get married. So it seems that it's really interesting that it just aligns, and maybe we should, none of us should be surprised by this, right? That it aligns completely with the way heterosexual families think about moving into a house.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we've been finding anecdotally across the country, and this is a trend that, has been growing over the past several years, is that LGBT couples having children and, really becoming families. And of course, the only part that was missing is that they weren't able to legally get married. So this sort of puts the icing on the cake for them, so to speak, and it allows them to feel even more comfortable moving into home ownership.
Do you find that there are, clearly neighborhoods across the country that are more friendly or less friendly to homosexual couples? With your agents, do you find that agents are overall generally happy to work with anybody, regardless of their sexual orientation?
Most agents are absolutely happy. And most agents, if they're trained professionals, will know which areas are friendlier than other areas, which school districts are friendlier, that type of thing. And so for a true professional real estate agent, they want to exceed their customers' expectations, no matter what the needs of that customer would be. It is part of the reason why we conducted this survey. We wanted to make sure that our agents across the country, and all agents for that matter, because we released the survey results publicly, would have as much information as possible to help LGBT couples feel comfortable moving into neighborhoods and comfortable with home ownership. One of the things that the survey results told us loud and clear is that a fear of LGBT potential homeowners is that they move into a neighborhood that's not friendly. And so there's an uncomfortable feeling there. And, that I think that the, the marriage law coming into place and the huge, and, I'm sure you saw it online, Elise, just the huge, overwhelmingly positive reaction to that. I was shocked myself. I really was that, our world is changing now, and we need to not just be up with the times, we need to be ahead of the times.
Have you had any Better Homes and Gardens real estate agents approach you privately to just say that they're uncomfortable with such a friendly, open, professional stance? Are you concerned about, are any real estate agents parting companies with either your company or others because they just don't want to work with people who have a different sexual orientation?
We have not at Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate had that at all. I do know that there are agents across the country that feel more comfortable working with clients that have the same religious beliefs or the same beliefs in general. And that's really personal choice. And so the good news is that there are 1.1 million real estate agents across the country. So there are enough agents to definitely help those 5 million home buyers buy a home. There's really something for everyone. And again, I'll say it's our job as a brand and as a franchisor to educate our agents as much as we can so they're comfortable and completely up to speed with all aspects of our industry.
It's kind of interesting. young kids today, the digital generation, even younger than millennials, they're, you know, sometimes you hear them referred to as Generation Z. I sort of say, well, they're the ones who actually had the brain chip implanted in their brain when they were born. So they're a little different from all of us. But this is such a non-issue for them. They don't even understand the idea that you're focused on somebody who's, you know, gay and lesbian. And what does that mean? You know, to them, it's like a big, you know, who cares? I have homework to do. That's what my kids said. We found out that, you know, a whole bunch of kids in their class came out as gay in high school. And his big response was, yeah, I got homework, Mom. Like, tell me something I actually need to know.
I know. It's, you know, it's really interesting. And I have to tell you, Elise, that we just completed a survey of Gen Z teenagers across the country, because there's been so much focus on the millennials. And so we thought, okay, we need to find out what these teenagers are thinking. And, you know, that's for another conversation. But the results of that survey, very interesting. But, you know, when you look at classrooms now, and I have two of my siblings are educators, and they tell me that it's very common today for kids in the classroom to have two moms or two dads. Nobody thinks anything of it. And, you know, I contrast that to the days when I was in school where, you know, it really wasn't heard of at all. It was suppressed. And now it's completely out in the open, which is such a wonderful feeling for everybody, I'm sure.
Yeah, it has to be terrific. Well, I want to turn our attention for just a minute to see how Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate is actually doing and competing with other brick and mortar brands. Out of the blue, we've got Berkshire Hathaway signs everywhere. We've got outfits like Owners.com and Zillow. The landscape has changed very, very quickly. You started with Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate. You moved over from Coldwell Banker 2008, the beginning of the worst housing downturn. And I remember it was you and one other person. I can't remember her name. And you're like, we're going to start this brand.
Exactly.
And the grass was growing. You had this lovely branding for it. So here we are. It's been, I can't even believe,
seven years,
right?
How
are things going? What are you finding now that Berkshire Hathaway has come into the fray? Where are things going?
Well, you know, we embrace, and there are always competitors out there, and competitors come and competitors go. So if we look at brands like Berkshire Hathaway, well, they bought the Prudential brand.
Right.
So that brand is going away, and Berkshire Hathaway is forming as a result. I have four other brands under the Realogy umbrella that are what I fondly refer to as our sister brands here at Realogy. But all of us have different value propositions. And when we launched BH&G back in 2008, our vision was to launch a brand that was very consumer focused. Because when you think about national real estate brands, their focus primarily is on the tools that they provide their agents and broker owners. And so with a name like Better Homes and Gardens, of course, we license the use of that trademark globally for real estate. It's just taken us to a different place where when we look at, for example, our social media feeds, Facebook in particular, our consumer social media page has exploded. People want design ideas and decorating ideas. And one of the things that we found is that today's consumer, because they have access to so much visual information, are dreaming about owning a home much earlier. And so what we've found is that we've been able to provide information and design tips and new trends in design much earlier and help the consumers through that dreaming phase. And then hopefully they'll buy a home through us. So it's been an interesting journey. And I want to say one thing, Elise, and that is when you launch something in a downturn, you have to be much more disciplined. And, you know, that is a trait, and I tell our team this often. I say, you know, anyone can launch something with a lot of money in the good times, so to speak. But what a wonderful experience to have that discipline to work through the downturn that we went through and the recession and to actually come out the other side. Today, we have over 10,000 agents. We're in 40 states, and we're in Canada and we're growing. And so it's been a wonderful journey, and it's been a journey that, personally has meant a lot to me, because we are able to help people at a different level.
Well, that's just great, Sherry. And of course, I remember being there as you were announcing it, watching the first few people sign up, and that was very exciting times.
It was very exciting times. And in fact, it's interesting that we're talking about this, because our 7-year anniversary is on Thursday.
Wow.
So time flies, that's for sure.
Well, congratulations and happy anniversary. I can't believe you're at 10,000 agents. That's a really significant number.
Thank you, Elise. And it's always great to speak with you. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, it's been terrific. Sherry Chris is the CEO of Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate. Thanks for being with me. Vacant land has a unique allure for many investors, builders, and owners. It's a blank canvas to some extent, and it's easy to fantasize about your dream house when you're looking at a blank canvas. But if you're going to buy vacant land, you better be ready to write a big check. Searching for a bank to finance the purchase of vacant land is typically a waste of time. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Real Estate Minute. So I got this question from someone hoping to build a home on a vacant piece of land. And my emailer said, I want to buy a lot to build on when I retire, and the ones I like seem to be priced to sell, but I don't have all the cash I need. Do you have any advice on what lenders actually want in order to lend on the purchase of a vacant lot? I only need to borrow $30,000 to $50,000, and I can easily swing putting 20% down. My credit score is 770. What do I do? I would like to pay this off in the next 5 to 8 years. Here's the answer. I like the plan, and it seems like you've budgeted well. You have a good idea of what you hope to accomplish with the purchase, but you're going to have to get creative to find the financing you need. For everybody watching this, you have to understand, when it comes to vacant lots, residential mortgage lenders will generally not lend you anything. You have to go to a commercial lender, and a commercial lender generally won't do it either, because you won't have any income coming in on the property. That's a big way we value investment property. Also, the amount you want to borrow, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, is very, very small for a commercial loan. So the fee structure would probably be outsized. I've got two suggestions. First, see if the owner of the lot might finance the purchase for you. If the owner doesn't have a loan on the property and you're willing to pay a slightly higher interest rate in order to secure the financing, an owner finance deal might work well all around. The other suggestion is to see if you can borrow against your primary residence and then use that cash to buy the lot. The problem here is not many lenders are doing home equity lines of credit these days, some more than others. These loans have been trashed in the housing crisis. Lenders took a really huge hit, and it has been slow to come back. It's coming back, it's just slow, and you may have to shop around a bit. The bottom line is that the options are going to be limited when it comes to financing vacant land. So you might find a mortgage broker with contacts that can help you out, but you have to make sure you understand what that person offers you, what costs are involved, and ultimately, how much it's going to cost you in the long run. If you're going to hold on to the land for 10 years without building and finance your ownership for that period of time, and we can have a whole separate conversation about that, it's a bad idea, you need to add that expense into the long-term ownership costs. Will buying now give you the benefit of the lower price for the long term? Maybe. But if the land doesn't really appreciate, the carrying costs of holding the land all these years will outweigh any price appreciation you'd enjoy by buying now. My typical feeling about this is, if you're not going to build within 6 months to a year on vacant land, you shouldn't be buying it. Make sure you consult with a real estate attorney to get a better sense of all of your options before you make a final decision about the buying or the financing of the vacant parcel. A few weeks ago, I answered a question about how to deal with a tenant who hasn't been paying his rent on time or at all. So in today's episode, I thought I'd give you 6 tips to help you find a reliable, responsible tenant to help fill your rental vacancy. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Real Estate Minute. First, you've got to try and underprice the market. If tenants smell a deal, they are going to flock to your door, and you should be able to pick the best one. I've seen this work over and over again. Second, you got to underpromise and overdeliver. Your property should shine next to others that prospective tenants are considering. And if you don't know what those properties look like and all the amenities they offer, you should spend a few Sundays going to look at houses for rent. Third, market in creative ways. You've got to advertise where the market is and what they're reading. For example, if there's a local neighborhood paper that everyone uses to find rental properties, advertise there. If you have a multifamily property, Talk to the other tenants about referring future tenants, and you can offer a bonus to listing agents or to your friends and neighbors if they bring in tenants. You can slip for rent signs into the rental buildings and offer a cash bonus if departing tenants find you a new tenant. If you live close to college, you've got to work with their housing department. Fourth, offer discounts to long-term renters. So, for example, you might give a month free for every 2 years of rent. Offer 2 months free if they sign a 3 or 4 year deal. You could offer free parking if that isn't something that normally comes with the unit. If your tenants think they're getting a great deal, they're more likely to stay, and they're more likely to refer their friends to come to your building as well. Fifth, and maybe this should have been first, you've got to use the internet and signage. Get your listing up on every available website, and if it's a single-family house, stick a big sign in the front yard with your phone number. Finally, you want to hold an open house. Pick a Sunday or a Saturday and hold an open house for prospective tenants and even for your regular tenants, who again may have friends or relatives that want to live in the building. I think finding tenants has become pretty tough, but as interest rates start rising again, more people are going to believe that they can get a better deal renting, and that is going to open the door for you. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I want to thank my guest, Sherry Chris. She's the CEO of Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, one more time for being on the show. If there was anything you missed, don't worry. You can find the show notes to this episode at thinklink.com, thinkglink.com. And if you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe. And if you're a regular listener and haven't already done so, please consider giving the show a rating or review in iTunes. You can do that by searching for The Elise Glink Show in the podcast section of iTunes, and this helps the show get discovered by new people. And while you're there, be sure to also search under my name for Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne. If you're running a small business and you need some help with PR and social media, this is the place you'll want to be. Check out Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne. All right, that's it for today. I'm your host, Elise Glink. I'll be back next week with another new episode of The Elise Glink Show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.